Well, that was very good. Very, very good. I like the way that worked. That was as smooth as... Well, what is it that was as smooth as? I hope Peggy isn't listening tonight because it was as smooth as that. Well, you know, she's a cat fancier. Well, that's the trouble, you know, in this business. You got to be so subtle that nobody gets what you're talking about. Nobody knows what it is. It's as smooth as... Oh, you got it. Oh, it's your... Very smooth. Very good. That was excellent. In fact, since it's Friday night and there is a sense, obviously, of incipient danger always contained in Friday itself, that I don't know whether or not I should take the opposite course and play against the motif or the tenor. In short, well, you know, I could easily create the incendiary, just the little spark that could cause it all to go up. I don't know whether or not tonight to tell the story of the Coca-Cola monster, or, yes, the Coca-Cola monster, and that, well, you have to use the brand name right there because it's very important, the Coca-Cola monster, or to tell the story of Bolus's insane marriage. Now, I don't know, to tell both of them, well, it has to be prefaced with perhaps the preface that it has to be prefaced with. Now, I am not the Thurberian type. In other words, the Thurber E.B. White school, the Robert Benchley school, who always feels that he is being vaguely bested by the machine. You know, this is one of the most popular forms of a kind of snobbery. To pretend that typewriters confuse you and loud ladies frighten you and machines are incalculable and that you don't know how to start a Chevy, you know, that kind of thing. That's a certain kind of snobbery, to pretend that all of civilization, the technical civilization, exists around you there and you can't cope with any of it, and that somehow shows that you're a better man for it. I never could understand how to close refrigerators. Well, somehow that makes you seem that you're above this, and you're more concerned with abstract truths such as, beauty, shimmering, such things as, you know what I'm talking about. You know, like guys that keep getting, they keep sharpening their finger on the pencil sharpener, that kind of thing. I'm sorry. I'll never forget the time I worked in this one joint where they got an electric pencil sharpener, and it slowed down production like 74% because they then developed long lines of people standing just waiting to sharpen pencils. You know, the wild thing. Guys would take their pencil, and they within 5 minutes they would take a brand new number 2 Ticonderoga and had absolutely nothing left than the eraser, just for the sheer kicks of sharpening. And just as well, that's another story, because you can learn to deal with the machine too good, you know. That is another form of snobbery, you know. It's the guy who is one with the motor, the man who is literally part of his Porsche. There are some people who are extensions of their Jaguars. They're just as much a part of their Jaguar as the ship. Have you noticed that today a new big extra that is being advertised on cars, it's a big extra, you pay extra for it, is a manual gear shift now. It's a big, big, new, super thing that is available for connoisseur car drivers. You know, you buy one of these fancy new American sport cars and it says, as extra added equipment, you can get a floor shift that works. Very special new piece of equipment. And I'm sure also that if you really want to spend extra, you can get a little opening in the front there for a crank that you can stick in and you can crank your car. And that's a little $174 extra special sports car, a little added touch. And you can also get tires that come off that you can change. That's a special extra for a man who really wants to get his hands greasy, who wants to get right down there on the road and feel the sense and the pulse of dynamic travel flowing through his knuckle bones. Oh, yeah, well, that's all part of it, sure. Eventually, you'll find that they will come out with a new Buick that will have manual windows that will give a man absolute fingertip control over each window personally. And it would say, no longer do you have to rely on Rothmel motors that push your windows up and down, giving you an impersonal feel that the motor goes up and down. You have nothing to do with it, and you can't really control it. Whereas the new chromium steel hand control knob, which is on new special extra models, can come to you for those of you who are connoisseurs and like to do it yourself and like to really feel the sense of that window going up. Now, no, that doesn't. We've come full circle. Do you know that it was reported in Time magazine recently, which, of course, you know, nothing is like a Time magazine report for sheer, solid, absolute bedrock truth. So it was reported in Time magazine. Now, Time, you can't sue. I said all good things about you there. It was very good. Nothing like bedrock truth that you find in Time. Now, there's all kinds of rock, though. I might point out that there's soft rock and there's hard rock and there's crumbly rock and there's all kinds of rock, but it's bedrock. And Time reported that the gypsy guitarists in Spain have heard American gypsy guitar records. And they never heard of gypsy guitar music in Spain, apparently, the gypsy guitarists. And they heard all the gypsy guitarists that were playing in the village and all these places, and they've picked up all kinds of tricks. And they're now recording them, and it's a big sensation in Spain, this new gypsy guitar type music. As I can imagine some guy coming out from under a rock just outside of Hazard, Kentucky, and sitting there bemused listening to a Joan Baez record singing about the hills of Kentucky. And he never heard of folk music, you see, one of those folk out there. He never heard of it, and he's picking up a few tricks from the Limelighters. It'll come full circle. And eventually you'll find that all the folk singers living in the Ozarks will sound roughly like a cross between Harry Belafonte, Pete Seeger, the Limelighters, and Joan Baez, depending on how good the local record dealer is in pushing his wares. But then I just wonder how many of us find that we are imitating ourselves. Literally, I know one guy who didn't, whose years he's worked on Madison Avenue, he didn't know anything about how he should have been until he started reading these scathing novels written by guys that live in Ohio about the rotten, seething world of Madison Avenue. And he found out that all the trysts that he should have been having after work, he hadn't been having. And all the chicks he should, you know, the whole bit. And he found out he was wearing the wrong clothes and everything. And now he's a perfect Madison Avenue man. It's very uncomfortable. The pants itch. But outside of that, and he's often very tired, you know, all that thing with the girls and all that. But he really, but he's doing pretty good, actually. He's lost three jobs, too, as a result. Because none of the other Madison Avenue men are the way Madison Avenue men are supposed to be. And since he's coming on like a phony now, well, you know, it's very confusing. I wonder where it starts and where it stops. Like the other day, I read a novel about a guy in radio and television. He's like no guy I ever read about. I never knew in radio or television. It was written by some angry hippie who was, you know, putting down the big wild communications world, which he knew because he listened to the radio all the time. He knew all about it. So, it's funny, because he'd read the other books about it. You see, I wonder how many guys write books based on the books they have read about the field. Seriously. I wonder how many guys write books about the friendly, wonderful street-singing Italians based on books they've read about wonderful street-singing, etc. Italians. Just curious. I wonder how many people, for example, write beatnik jokes or write hippie jokes or write for example, television plays about, say, people living in the village based on other plays they've seen about people living in the village. Till eventually the whole myth begins to be accepted, you know? So, you know, here we sit. Oh, speaking of myths, it's been a long time since we've had our English newscast. You have your English newscaster music in there. Got the English newscaster there. You know the English newscast music. Get it on there. I'll tell you, the one to get is Coronation is good. Coronation. Coronation there. You find it listed there. It'll assist you. There it is. There he's got it. Oh, boy. It's got to be all set in there, Ed? All right. Get in there. Oh, one lady wrote to me the other day, and she said, "Dear Mr. Shepherd, I resent the fact that you have created an artificial character on your program known as Ed. I happen to know that there is no Ed, and I believe you should tell the listeners that there is no Ed." All right, there is no Ed. However, let's get with the Easter Bunny. Around the town, my God, there'll always be an England. There'll always be, by George, an England. Always we shall fight. We shall fight them from the hedgerows. We shall fight them. We shall fight them from the heart of
and tears.
Good afternoon, this is the BBC. And our feature news program this evening features a story from Lincoln from the south of England. Something a man has nightmares about happened to Maurice Jacobson this week in Lincoln, England. Mr. Jacobson's pants fell to the floor as he conducted a choir before a packed house. He caught the pants briefly as they creased around his knees, and then his grip loosened. Jacobson, a dignified gentleman of 67 and an ex-Coldstream guardsman, was conducting 400 children at a large Methodist church festival in Lincoln. One hand went on beating time, and the other slowly inched his pants up to a respectable height, all the while keeping the beat and the tempo of the magnificent performance that was underway. Then he sat down, still conducting unperturbedly. When the song was over, he put his safety pin in his pants. The audience, to a man and to a gentlewoman, rose to their feet and cheered. "It was a magnificent performance," said one Methodist matron. "Mr. Jacobson's, I mean. And so today, too, there will always be an England award goes Mr. Jacobson. My God, Jacobson, you are one of the men. One of the men to go on all the way back to Richard the Lionhearted and the great stand at Ladysmith. But I don't know that now." And so to you, to Englishmen everywhere, we send tonight's salute. Keep faith. There will always be an England. Boing.
Hey, George, speaking of pants. Now, this is WOR AM and FM, New York. And we you know, you got my little thing in there. I need, I'll tell you what I want in there, because you weren't around. You know, I could get that little one in the yellow envelope there. Hold it up, and I'll show you the one I mean. That's the one. You know what I want. Because it has to do with what we must say tonight about the machine and being caught. You know, you know, it's funny how in it, I guess it isn't really funny. I guess it's the way it is. I guess it's the way we all are. But the other day, I heard a very official type being interviewed on a very official program. On this program, this station, by the way, very official, you know, the interview type. And this guy was talking about the problem. I keep referring to it as a problem. The problem among adolescents and the teenagers. And you know how the world is different and so on. The world of the people who are growing up in this date and time and so forth. And what was fascinating me is as I sat and listened to it for 45 minutes, not one time did anybody even hint, so much as vaguely hint, at the genuine problem, at the real things that are happening. Well, now that's only in one area. There are some things you just can't say, you know. There are things that you can't say that I can't say, and yet the intriguing thing about it is that all of us know. It's always a secret. I wonder how many people are angry at what is happening in the teenage world, and I'm talking about all the things that are happening, all the way down the line. And you know what I mean, all the way down the line. I wonder how many people are really angry because they feel cheated. That, you know, that they spent all of their time sitting on the 20-yard line hollering for guys to score a touchdown, or studying geography when they were teenagers, or looking at their face in the mirror trying to figure out what to do about pimples. That was about the extent of it, you know. I wonder how many of us wax indignant about a topic or a theme or a cause because we really feel exactly the opposite to that. No? You don't think so. You're right down the line. You're true blue, eh? Well, I heard a little comment the other night in the Village Joint. It was about a play. It was about Pirandello. Probably Pirandello's most famous play, Six Characters in Search of an Author. And the chick who was making the comment said, well, a lot of my friends won't go and see that. And I said, well, why? She said, well, I hear it's a magnificent production and everything else, but they won't go and see it. And I said, well, what do you mean they won't go and see it? What do you mean? Why? She says, well, because they don't like what Pirandello said. Well, what Pirandello said is that everybody all the time is somebody else, literally. He said that good guys are bad guys most of the time, and bad guys are good guys a good deal of the time, and strong guys are weak guys a lot of times, and weak guys are strong guys many times, and all the way down the line. And this is a very unacceptable thing, you know, that because it destroys, oh boy, it makes everything shaky, you know what I mean? It's a very shaky business. So I suppose tonight, speaking of shaky business tonight, I think what I will do is, I'll have to tell you the story of the Coca-Cola monster. But I have to preface that with something else. Eddie?
Milwaukee. It was a day of days, a difficult day for Deputy Sheriff Albert E. Shortridge.
Up and down it went. Up and down it went,
said Shortridge, referring to a confused 35-minute ride yesterday in a freight elevator at the courthouse.
I lost count of how many ups and downs after the 25th trip.
Shortridge had gone to the courthouse to serve as bailiff for County Judge Herbert Schultz. He got on the elevator on the ground floor and pushed the up button. Up he went. And down he went. And up he went. And down he went. And up he went. And down he went. And up he went. And down he went. He pushed the emergency button, which sounded the alarm. But no one responded because it was Saturday, and no one was around in the courthouse. Up he went. Down he went.
I pushed all the buttons. I kept pushing them,
he said. Down he went. Faster and faster. Up he went. All by himself in the machine, in the courthouse. On Saturday, he pushed the emergency button. He's gone there. Down he went. Up he went. Down he went. He pushed all the buttons repeatedly. Up he went. Down he went.
All of a sudden, something connected.
Shortridge got off on the ground floor and headed for a regular elevator, which took him to the courtroom floor without incident. 37 minutes in an elevator, up and down, up and down. Just as he got set for work, the telephone rang. Shortridge's boss was on the phone screaming, bawling him out, being late for work. Up and down. Up and down. Up and down. Up and down. It's like, who is to understand the quality of nuttiness? You live in the world. I think what makes people so constantly confused and irritated about the world we live in, and I'm not talking about America, doesn't immediately jump and say this is America. I'm talking about the world people, the whole shooting match. Is they keep trying to put order into it. They keep trying to make it logical. It's like trying to make a whirlpool behave. It's like trying to take chaos and make it into a jigsaw puzzle that all fits together. By the way, that's a fantastic word, chaos. I think chaos describes our life, or life, just period, life, better than any word that I know. Do any of you have a dictionary out there? Chaos. Chaos. That's not spelled with a K. No, it says chaos. Chaos. I'll ask you to try to work that one out for yourself. It's chaos. I'll give you something to chew on. But it really describes it, and we keep trying to make it all come out logically, you see. And all the while, we ourselves are living chaotically. The average guy is ad-libbing from second to second, even though he likes to pretend he's got a system. And half the while, he's just dreaming. His head is going, and it's floating around there. You walk down the street, you know, and you figure, well, I'm going to get a paper. And your old noggin, your old thing, your old idea balloon is floating around there all around your head. And you look in for a minute, you stop, and you look in the window at the Japanese little spy cameras for 87 cents. You've been looking at them now for 9 years, exactly the same way you look at them. And then you walk a little bit, and you look at a sport coat in the window at Bonds. And you just sort of wander. You look out, you see a car go down the street, you look at that, and then you see a chick go along, and you say, well, I'm going to get a paper now. And suddenly it comes back to you, and you chew your gum a little. And then you, for some reason or other, you think of your school, and you go along, and then you itch, and you just go on and on and on. Just all the while, your brain is doing it. It's making little things. It's combining thing, bow, ting, little balloons breaking. It's like a great big bowl of cream of wheat that's being heated up. It bubbled. And then suddenly you say, I'll go in chock full of nuts and get a coffee. You sit down there, the chick brings you the coffee and the brownie. You look at her and she's got a name tag. It says Lydia. Lydia May. You debate for a second with it and holler, hey, Lydia! Baby. You think better of it. You look at the clock. Your old idea balloon is floating around bobbing, just hanging there back of you now. The big face on it. There's a guy across there picking a pimple. You look at him. You eat your brownie. There goes a girl out with a shopping bag. You vaguely, a little thought goes. You get your coffee down, finally. Say, gee, no grounds at the bottom. You scratch. You catch yourself scratching. You stop. You go out through the swinging door. And 5 minutes later, you're at your desk at the UN, a gigantic ambassador. And we're always trying to make it come out right. We're always trying to make it add up. It's like the wonderful split that is existing today in most guys' minds. It's that great split between public morality and private morality. Well, let's say public morality and private immorality. And you know, I caught one of those guys one day the other day. We were talking about this. He wants the government and all people connected with the government to be absolutely, unbelievably moral. Truthful right down to the last comma, period. To behave always in absolute strict accordance with all Christian, Semitic, all known philosophical doctrine. Absolutely right. The lotus blossom blooms. But he demands, and not only demands, but takes the reservation that he, however, in his own private life, can never once be expected to utter one truthful word and swing with every known creature that walks on 2 feet. Fascinating. One is called liberty and the other is called I don't know what. Intriguing. And all the while we're trying to put the little things together. No, this is an interesting thing. Like there's one guy who's continually writing great diatribes about peace and who very publicly stabbed his wife. Now, where does peace begin? You know, you wonder about this. And so all the while we're trying to try. Now, how can you make order out of the world? It is basically disorderly. There it is. It just happens. That's all. It's like a great natural phenomenon. I wonder how many of us ever really realize that we are part of the natural phenomenon, just all of it. You know, all of it. And as such, we are biological entities as well as abstract entities. You begin to see this, huh? Do you have the other one? Huh? All right, listen to this one now. Now, all of us know what is more official in this world than a steel business? How do you think you'd sell steel? I mean, really sell steel.
I mean, say, what if you were U.S. Steel? Now, how do you think you'd sell steel? You don't have, you have no idea? Well, you're going to hear how you sell steel.
Step up, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, U.S. Steel's exhibit for the Construction Equipment Exposition and Roadshow in Chicago is now underway. Step up, one by one. Step up, each and every one of you, ladies and gentlemen. The central theme of our U.S. Steel exhibit in booth number 316 will be expressed in this legend, One Jump Ahead, New Products and New Ideas from United States Steel. And this phrase will literally come to life, ladies and gentlemen, as well as Jody James, a most attractive and personable young lady. She will bounce on a trampoline and describe, as she does, via a closed-circuit telephone hookup, units of the U.S. Steel display around her as she bounces up and down in her beautiful, specially designed U.S. Steel construction bikini. Little Jody will point out new U.S. Steel quenched and tempered alloy steel shapes for use in construction equipment. Go, Judy, go. An application illustrated via beautiful four-color artwork. You'll notice it demonstrated nicely by Judy as she does her double back flips on the trampoline, the first TI construction alloy in the world. A new design for medial strip guardrail for improved safety illustration by artwork. Go, Judy, go. Gentlemen, step up. The U.S. Steel exhibit is now underway. Samples of U.S. Steel open hearth slag are now available for all of you gentlemen if you'll step up here. Go, Judy, go. Show will go on in just 17 minutes. We certainly hope that all of you men have enjoyed little Jody James on her bouncing trampoline. Little bouncing Jody, we call her, as she's demonstrated to you our new phrase, one jump ahead. Jump, Judy. I caught pile out quietly, man, pile out quietly. If you care to stay for the next show, leave your name with the man at the desk. Step right up. The next show will be going on in just a few moments. United States Steel, one jump ahead. Little Judy James jumps for all of us, man. Point, go, Judy, baby, go. States economic structure. Judy jumps for all of us.
Now, I read that to you word for word from a magazine discussing the steel industry. And it's presented very straight-faced, and they apparently didn't realize that there was humor here. So that's the way steel is sold in the United States. Now, that's the way it's sold all over the place, huh? In fact, that is the way the world is sold. That is the way, in many areas, religion is sold. The other night, we were talking about the idea of the great taped introduction, where General Dwight Eisenhower will be specially taped, and you can hear him talking to you in his birthplace home via little wall telephones that are genuine antique phones. You pick it up. This is General Dwight Eisenhower greeting you personally. Well, of course, this is not a new idea. Somebody wrote to me and suggested that we get Charlton Heston to record special tapes for really progressive churches. When you come in, and all he would have to say is, if you can give me a little echo chamber, then I think it would work.
This is God, and I'd like to greet all of you personally, and I'd like to have all of you realize that...
Well, now, that hello, Test, that's not so... that's not so funny. There are churches that have literally done that. Where? Well, it doesn't make any difference where. I know a church out in the Midwest that has a gigantic
neon, a giant neon mural, if you can imagine, a neon Last Supper in three neon colors, yes. Oh, yes, and once in a while, you know, it's a little eerie effect in the rain when there's a leaky transformer. And it's buzzing, though. You feel that the psychic phenomena is actually starting to happen. But now this kind of thing that goes on. So when you're faced with it, you know that you can't really put it into any kind of an order. Well, all right, I'll tell you the story since you're interested in this guy going up and down on the. We better do the commercials here before we do anything else. We have Mandarin House with us, and one of the Mandarin House restaurants is the Great Shanghai. There are about 27 restaurants here in town that have a name similar. But the Great Shanghai is up on Broadway between 102nd and 103rd, and it is literally called the Great Shanghai. And it is owned and operated by Emily Kuo, who operates the Mandarin House on 13th Street and the one up on 2nd Avenue. But the difference between them is that this is a Cantonese restaurant, and they have probably the largest Cantonese menu of any place in the city. It's a fantastic menu. And it's a great hangout for Columbia students and college students in general, and one of the finest Cantonese restaurants around, and is literally, and has been for a long time, a real Cantonese food legend. I heard about it when I first got into town years ago, and I think you will find it worth a visit if you're going to make the uptown scene. This is the Great Shanghai. If you would like to try Mandarin food, I would highly recommend the Mandarin House on 13th Street between 6th and 7th in the village. They're both open over the weekends, okay? Now, let's see. We have the Paper Book Gallery, speaking of scene makers. And if you're coming into town, it's terrible how you learn that you're speaking in shorthand here that's only understood by a certain number of people. Hey, did you see the article, Kill the Crime? I'll finish the commercial because these guys get all hipped on this. But the Paper Book Gallery is open on, no, I don't know whether they're open on the weekend or not. I don't think so. They're open Saturday, I know. But it's on 6th Avenue, just off A Street in the village, and is one of the wildest, most New York phenomena that I know. It's different from any paperback bookshop I know in the country, and it is a true New York thing. I don't think a bookshop of this kind could exist anywhere else in the country. They're just exactly the way this one exists, the relationship between the people there and the way it is. And if you are interested in records, they have a gigantic collection of the most god-awful records you ever saw in your life. And if you would like to if you would like to make an experiment there, I would suggest you buy a record, notify them that you're a listener, and they'll let you pick any other of these wild records in the place absolutely gratis, and will probably thank you for taking it away. They have one roller skating record that is nothing but the sound of 400 Ukrainians roller skating on a concrete bois. It's very, very lovely. It's very interesting. Bois. So this is a $3.99, the Paper Book Gallery, right? Okay, that's it. That's the end of it. Well, we got opera promotion. What are they doing? La Traviata tomorrow. Giuseppe Verdi at 2 o'clock on WOR. Okay? Now, I'll tell you the story of, I don't know whether I should start this or not because it's kind of late to start it. But, yeah, I'll tell you the story. I might as well. It's the story of the time that I got undone by the great Coca-Cola monster. Well, you know, and, I, of course, I have to preface this by saying that all of you have been in gigantic official buildings, haven't you? I mean, you know, the kind of building where, you know, the sort of banks that always advertise their tremendously warm handshake, and you get in there, and it's the first time you've ever had a marble handshake. And, with all the brass and the chrome and all the people standing around with the uniforms. I feel, myself, I always feel vaguely guilty when I go in a bank. I think banks are built that way. It's just the way banks are. I always feel like I want to get down on my knees when somebody cashes my check in the bank, and I'm always apologetic. And I can bring my money in there, and I'm cashing real money, you know, or I'm giving them money. And I always feel like I'm getting away with something when I get out without having gotten pinched just after I've given the money. You know the strange feeling about banks? Well, we are that way, you see. It's just the way it is. I can't describe it. What? Why? Or there it is. So one day I'm a kid, and I'm working for this gigantic steel company, Inland Steel, and they have their main offices right in the heart of the financial district in Chicago. Now that's like on Wall Street. It's on LaSalle Street in Chicago, And it is the financial... It's like canyons of big official people. Guys walking around with Hamburg hats and ticker tapes going and marble fronts and buildings and wicker cages and people with gray faces. And, oh, you know, it's money, money. It's official. Well, I'm this little kid, you know, and once a week I'm sent away from the blast furnace, which is where I'm at home, and the open hearth, which, believe it or not, is where I'm at home. I knew my way around the 14-inch merchant mill like a rat. I mean, living behind the Coke machine. I knew every little cranny in it. I was at home. So once a week, they'd send me to the main office with the main office mail, all official orders and stuff. And I'm there with my lumber jacket, and I have my special corduroy pants pressed for going to the main office. And I've got this leather bag with the money or whatever it is that was in it. I never knew what was in this. Strapped to me, clamped to me with a chain on my wrist, with a little hook and with a lock and a thing, you see. And I didn't have the key. It was locked to me. I couldn't lose it, you see. The guy in the main office had the key. I had to go to see Mr. Smithers or something. He would open it up. So I'm waiting outside for him to come, and I'm in this marble hall that had marble pillars that went 17 stories up in the air. And these beautiful women would walk past, all looking like old people like Myrna Loy, you know. They all look like that. Lady types, you know, working in this office. And gentlemen with gray hair, C. Aubrey Smith, and there was a discreet Coke machine. Well, I had a thing in my pocket, so I take it out, and I'm going to have a Coke while I'm waiting. And it was one of these machines that drops a little cup down. It goes, oop. Oop. I open the door, take the Coke out. Instantly, it goes, oop. Down comes another cup. I take the second one out. I put it down. I got two Cokes in my hand. I take that one out. I'm standing there with the Cokes, and as fast as I can put Cokes down, this thing is being milked. More Cokes. And people are walking past. Elderly gentlemen with gray hair and ladies with their girdles squeaking are walking past. I keep taking Cokes out. Once in a while, I'd look up and say, I like a Coke. I like a Coke. One after the other. And they didn't say anything. Just kept walking past. I kept taking Cokes out. Well, by noon, there were 147 Cokes around me, all around me, and the machine kept still dropping cups down. Now it was just squirting fizzly water. And all the while, people kept walking past me. 145 glasses, 146 glasses, 147 glasses. Mr. Smithers finally came out and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I just, would you like a Coke?" I said,